Hi, folks. Welcome to another one of our political chats. I'm joined by Dan. Today, we're going to be talking about Andy Burnham and his influence of politics that are occupying our government. Honestly, I mean, we've talked about Burnham's cabinet previously, but it's like the least inspiring dregs of the Blairite era combined with a bunch of low IQ Northerners. Angela Rayner is the housing secretary, and you know that this comes from her desire to just put Northerners in little two-bedroom terraced houses because that's the platonic ideal of a Northerner.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, if you're Andy Burnham and you have to select from all of the talents available in the Labour Party, I mean, do you necessarily think you could do better?
Well, No. No, maybe not. Maybe that's a good point. But that he is right when he says, oh, this is the last chance that Labour have. And yes. I think he's correct about that. And by God, I think he's going to fail. Anyway, so he's been bringing on a bunch of the lefties in the Labour Party because he's not necessarily an ideological leftist, but he's kind of like that kind of soft leftist, the natural Labour voting person. He's their kind of leftist, right? He doesn't understand entrepreneurialism. As far as he's concerned, money comes from the government, right? That's where money comes from. That's how things are done. Because that's how Andy Burnham's entire career has been done. But also that's what, you know, things were done in previous eras. So, okay, we need state, like mission critical state industries, like, you know, coal mining or steel production or things like this. It's like, yeah, okay, these are giant industries that have to be in some way overseen by the state, even if they're not directly owned by the state, because these are critical for national security.
So you definitely get the impression, listening to almost all Labour MPs, that any money that isn't in the government is wasted money. Like, yes. If it's in the private sector, yes. If it's in personal wealth, whatever it is, it's not in the government, it's wasted money. And their mission is essentially to get as much as it as possible to flow through the government and then out to the things where, in their minds, it's now productive.
Yeah, so they can put Northerners in little terraced houses.
Yes.
Like, this is genuinely the dream of the Labour government. One day, everyone in the entire country will live in a little terraced house like my grandfather used to. It's like, I actually don't want that. I'm from the Southwest. We don't live in little terraced houses. Thank you very much.
I mean, I don't necessarily mind that all his attention is on the North, because if the government's attention is not on me, I quite like that.
But it is, because as you said, I actually think it's worse than they think it's wasted. I think they think it's being stolen, right?
Well, yes.
I think they think all of the money in the country is actually theirs.
Yes.
And so if they don't have access to it, then it's kind of illegitimate that you have access to it.
Yes, what do they call it? They call it selfishness when you keep your own money.
Yes. I don't want to pay very high taxes. Well, aren't you selfish?
Yes.
Yeah, what a bastard I am. Like, for working hard and earning this money and not just willingly giving it up to the government.
Well, and God forbid you die and you leave your children something. I mean, that's the worst kind of selfishness.
You know what? Andy Burnham, he's been saying a lot of things, but not necessarily doing a lot of things. Mm. And a 10% death tax was actually something he had floated the other day. I forgot to add it in. So, by the way, he also wants a 10%.
So he needs to be really careful here, because this is something that the big mistake that Starmer made, and I'd be shocked if you don't have the number of millionaires in the UK going down in the deck somewhere.
Yeah, I do.
But one of the big mistakes that Starmer made with, I've forgotten her name, Farmers? Becky from Accounts.
Oh, yeah.
Is before their first budget, is they speculated on basically every possible tax rise to see how it went down. And they did that for, it must have been 6 to 9 months. Well, they were just speculating, oh, we could tax this, we could tax that. And then they got to the budget and basically everybody had already changed their behaviour or their residency status, as is the case with millionaires, so that when the budget hit, they weren't going to be impacted by this. And then it turned out the budget was actually, compared to what we thought it was going to be, relatively mild. But all of the damage had been done by that. So Burnham really wants to be careful that he doesn't do a repeat of that, because as you will show us later, the effect is horrific.
Yes. I mean, there have been lots of things that have been floated, as you say, and I haven't included all of them. Like, they did float the idea of an exit tax very briefly. It's just like I've heard it been mentioned, right? In the conversation. Whether I mean, I'm sure nothing comes of it, you know, because I mean there are certain realms that even the most soft, retarded...
You don't need to have much of a net worth. If you just hear them talking about exit taxes. You have to go before the budget.
Yeah. Anyway, so they've been bringing on a load of lefties, as you'd expect. And these comms advisors that Andy Burnham have invented four new themes to sell his message. Britain believing in itself again. Britain better off. Room to breathe and power to communities.
Okay.
None of those are in any way useful, right?
Well, the first ones make Britain great again. I mean, kind of, yeah. That's kind of what Restore does, but okay. Britain better off by taxing us more, presumably. Yeah. Room to breathe, but not in one of these boxy little houses.
Yeah. But remember, £2 bus fare cap? Even though it's a £3 bus fare cap at the moment, yeah. It's not. If I was paying £20 for a bus, I'd be like, yeah, okay, maybe. But like, it's not exactly a lot, you know. So like, is this the problem? And then power to communities, which, yeah, I'm sure that we're going to get loads of power devolved in the Southwest. I mean, I'd love a Wessex Parliament, actually.
Yes.
You know, that would actually be lovely, because then we could secede from the UK, possibly raise.
Well, if Scotland and Wales can have one, why can't Wessex and Northumbria and Mercia?
Yeah. Why can't the Septarchy be reborn? Anyway, so there are some substantive things that he's said he's going to do or not do. The first one is he's not going to change stamp duty this year. okay. So, for example, stamp duty, for anyone who doesn't know, is the every time I describe what you're paying taxes for, it's going to sound like it's just a mafia shakedown, right? But I swear to God,
unless you're British and you're used to it.
Yeah. But to anyone who doesn't have this, every time you buy a house after your first house, the government just wants a huge cut of it. So it can, you know, in the tens of thousands of pounds, just because you had the temerity to want to buy a house, the government put stamps.
Well, and it started off at literally the price of a stamp.
Yeah.
Because the government had to register that, okay, somebody now owns this house as a method of securing property rights. But then they realised, oh, hang on, maybe we can move it up and up and up. And it's got to the point where,
it is tens of thousands of pounds. 10p back in the day.
Yeah, and one of the big effects of this is that it heavily, heavily disincentivised people moving house in this country. Yeah. So what you'll get is you'll get boomers who are living in a six-bedroom house, all the kids moved out, possibly one of them's died, but you have this little old lady living by herself in a massive house. Because if she moves to a bungalow, she's going to have to pay all of this stamp duty. So it's actually cheap. He's like, okay, well, I'm going to spend £20,000 moving. I'll just stay where I am and just run out the clock on a massive house.
Yeah.
So you don't get that circulation of people living in housing which is appropriate.
And so it's weird that, you know, younger people can't buy half-decent houses to raise families in because everything's locked up. Because the government's like, no, you have to pay me £50,000 if you want to move house.
Yeah.
And again, it's just a scam. It's just like business rates. Apparently, another thing I forgot to include in this, actually, is he said he's going to reduce business rates on pubs. And it's like, okay, but what about all the other businesses? Business rates, again, they're just the local government, the local council, saying, right, okay, you want to have a business. We're just going to have to give us some money. Like, again, thousands of pounds each month just for existing as a business. You don't get anything for it. They just take it from you. It's just
and business
scam.
Mates, they make a huge difference. So there's a precinct near where I live. Mm-hmm. It's kind of 70s brutalist square block thing. And it's always full. Every shop is full. And I've always wondered why that was. And I found out a couple of years
ago. But it's exempt from business rates.
It's exempt from business rates because apparently the condition of this thing has not been maintained and therefore they can't charge business rates.
Oh, really?
It's absolutely rammed. And then you look around at other places and there's empty shops all over the place. So it makes a huge difference to businesses.
And people wonder, oh, why is it all vape shops and Turkish barbers? Because they don't pay business rates. Why don't they pay business rates? Because they're illegitimate businesses.
Yep, and they just dissolve.
And then reconstitute a brand new business in exactly the same property with exactly the same equipment. And this just carries on for years.
But Cousin 37 is now listed as opposed to Cousin 36.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it massive, just rip off Britain is a true statement. Anyway, so he wants young people to get into technical training. He's been saying this quite a lot, actually. You know, can AI build a train? Well, I mean, one day it will. Like, there's a weird sort of lack of vision here.
Yes.
In a couple of years' time, AIs will be building trains.
Yeah. Yes, almost certainly, yeah.
Without a doubt. But he wants young people to do manual labour jobs. And don't get me wrong, I'm in favour of it. Cramming everyone into universities has not actually improved anything. It's not improved the quality of university education. It's not improved the desirability of a degree.
Oh no, it's massively weakened it.
It absolutely.
Because now a degree doesn't really mean anything.
It doesn't actually mean you're a smart, intelligent, educated
well done.
Person.
You've got a degree in nutrition pottery from the University of Littlehampton. It's like, okay, right.
Yes, so what? You know. So actually, this is actually a good thing. But he's complaining because, of course, well, too many young people are out of work. Well, why are so many young people out of work?
Well, I could go into this a lot.
Go ahead. Give us a summary.
Well, okay. But so, I mean, many ways to approach this. But, I mean, one, let's start with incentives. You're a young person and you're earning a minimum wage job. Because minimum wage has gone up and up, that is not the slight that it used to be. Actually, being a young person and getting a minimum wage job is actually fairly good by itself, because if you're 18, they're going to pay you the same as a 25-year-old. So why wouldn't you pick somebody who's got work experience as opposed to an 18-year-old? It used to be 18-year-olds were cheaper, and then they moved you up the payment. So, okay,
I
mean, fine.
I remember when I was 18.
Yes.
I used to live in Newquay, and I would I would clean nightclubs or work in nightclubs for like £3 an hour. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't a lot of money, but then I lived with my parents, right? Yep. So I actually always had money, because I didn't have to pay rent, I didn't have to pay bills, didn't have to pay food even. You know, so I worked, you know, while I was at college and then university, and I always had money.
Yes.
Because I was able to get, because this was before minimum wage came in.
Yep. Yeah, because the way that the left thinks minimum wage works is it raises everybody's salary to the minimum wage. Well, no, what it actually does is it draws a line and says if your labour is worth less to your employer than this amount, it's illegal to give you a job.
What it does is narrow the jobs available.
Yeah, it just makes it illegal to have a job if your labour isn't worth that. Yes. So for that nightclub, it was worth employing a young person to do something like that at that rate, whereas if they forced you them to pay you more, it wouldn't have been worth it. Yeah. So incentive-wise, if you're a young person on a minimum wage job, it's something like a thousand. I have looked at the numbers, like $1,300 a month, something like that. Yeah. If you're a young person who can claim anxiety, well, now it's $1,900 per month. So you're substantially better off by going to your doctors. And it's not difficult. I could go on YouTube now and I could find a whole bunch of influencers explaining to me how to go to the doctors and claim that I got anxiety in a way that they wouldn't be able to disprove. And then you get an instant 50% pay bump if you're a young person. So the incentives are all wrong. But okay, let's say you even wanted to work.
Yeah.
Well, now, like I said, it's more attractive to employ somebody over 25. But also, you've got a whole bunch of foreigners who are coming in. If you're going to pay anyone below minimum wage, you pay them, because they're actually running a scam, because half of them don't have the approval to work. They're sharing their identity with six other people.
A lot of them would be illegals.
Yeah. I mean, I'll stop there, but I could talk for a lot about why employment in this country is screwed up.
The labour market is weighted against native young people. And that's why, since 2020, only 11,000 young people have been employed in the UK.
No way.
Apparently. The number of non-EU under 25s on UK payrolls increased by 290,000 since January 2020, compared to 11,000 extra young UK nationals. So the increase is 290,000 foreigners on top of whatever existed.
Good God.
It's an unbelievable betrayal. Like, if I were a young person in this country, I'd be feeling revolutionary. How dare you do that?
I mean, I knew it was bad, but when you lay it out like that.
Yeah. So now there are something along the lines of 1 million young NEETs in this country. Because, and everyone's like, oh, they're lazy. No, they're not lazy. They can't get a job. You literally replace them with foreigners.
Yeah, I think it is a bit of column A and a bit of column B. I mean,
I'm not thrilled with the work ethic of Gen Z either, but in their defense, this is a pretty tough market to have to go into.
Well, yeah. I mean, the incentives are one thing. If you can get an instant 50% pay bump by going to the doctors and pretending, and then you get to sit home and play video games and you earn more, I mean, that is attractive.
It's ridiculous.
But let's say we took it all away. Well, then you'd have to do something about them competing with people who are coming over from North Africa who are willing to work below minimum wage because there's actually six of them with the same name.
Yeah, you'd have to deport millions of people. Anyway, so he's ruled out a general election.
What a shocker.
Yeah, not a great shock.
I've got 166 majority, and even if the burn and bounce holds, I'll have like 20.
We'll get into the burn and bounce at the end, because it's not as impressive as you might think. Although they are trying to...
The papers are bigging it up.
They are trying to massage the figures to make it look like there is.
Right.
Again, another example of the polls leading. But the idea of compulsory voting has been floated, which I think is actually a great idea, right? As in, you find people who don't cast a ballot. Right?
Well, I know why Labour like it, because there's a, if you were to draw the Venn diagram of low information voters and Labour voters, there's quite a lot of overlap. But why do you like it?
Because 40% of this country doesn't vote, because they don't feel that there's a point to it. And so, okay, so that's a huge constituency of people who are disaffected with the system, who are not Labour voters,
right,
who would be forced back into politics, be forced to engage. And moreover, actually, I think that politics intruding on people's lives in this kind of direct way is kind of important at this point. Right? Because a lot of people are just checked out. They're like, oh, I'll just try and avoid politics. No. Everything wrong that's happening in your life,
yes,
the origin point of that is a political decision made by a government.
So to be fair, Labour tinker regularly with the franchise.
Yes.
And every time they do, it blows up in their face. So yes. So we're going to give parliaments to Scotland. Yep. Well, it created the SNP. Well, it didn't create the SNP, but
it gave them a platform.
Yes, it gave them. I mean, I remember going to Parliament when I was, must have been like 19 or something, and sitting down and chatting with an SNP guy and a Plaid Cymru guy. And the reason those two were hanging out together is because there's like literally a handful of them.
Yeah. And look at Wales now.
Yes.
There are no Labour. I think it was zero Labour in the Welsh Assembly.
Yes.
Like they're completely wiped out by Reform and Plaid Cymru.
Yeah, I mean, they're massive now. And the other one, of course, is Votes for 16s. And then the Green Party basically get a massive surge. I mean, I know they've retreated a little bit now in the burn and bounce.
But it's still, with young people, the Greens are well ahead.
But I accept the argument that every time Labour does this, it blows up like Elmer Fudd's shotgun. Yeah.
And so forcing 40% of people who are just not interested in engaging with politics, you know, who look at the political landscape and go, there's nothing there for me.
Mm.
Going to them, going, no, you've got to pick something.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and we will arrest you if you don't go down.
Yeah, we will fine you and ultimately arrest you if you don't pick something. Bringing them in, making them even more resentful that they can't even get away from politics. Now, Andy Burnham is going to come to your house and make you vote. Yeah. Okay, well, who's the furthest right I can vote? Who do you hate the most? You know, like all I'm saying is I could see this blowing up in their faces, and actually a sizable constituency of really resentful people who don't like the way the country is going, but don't feel that there's anything they can vote for to get out of it, may be forced to vote for something.
Yeah, I mean, there will also be a lot of people who just don't think about it at all.
Yeah. True.
And Labour are hoping to get them.
Yeah, but I don't think they're going to. I think I like we've said before, everything else will just blow up in the faces.
But it's either that or proportional representation. I mean, Labour have a large majority and they've got to find a way to win the next election. And appealing to the voters on the basis of their policies and personalities is not going to swing it. So it needs to be some sort of tinkering.
Yeah, I mean, we could go back to talking about Brexit. Different thing. We've got the same migrant problem as ever. And so Andy Burnham did finally address it. He did finally come out and say something about the migrants.
Oh, yeah.
He said, quote, "The work on that continues."
Right. So maybe we're going to give the French another 100 million?
They did fire at Chris Philp the other day, so maybe we should.
Right. I did like that, but the French, I don't think it's worth paying the French 100 million to fire at Chris Robbs, because they're clearly
fire
not.
At Conservative MPs.
Yes. But they're clearly not doing anything to stop migrants coming over, no matter how much money we give.
No, in fact, that was what Chris Philp was doing, which is why they shot
him. Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
See, they obviously that continues. I mean, apparently, quote, "There's no work change in the work being carried out by Shabana Mahmood and her department." But the thing is, I mean, it's got as bad as it ever has. A mega dinghy the other day carried a record of 165 migrants to the UK.
What's a mega dinghy?
Yeah, exactly. What's a mega dinghy? Well, it's a gargantuan dinghy, as you can see there.
Well, now that's the border security.
Yeah, that's them capturing it. But the dinghy.
Oh, that thing on the
side. Yeah,
you can fit 165 people onto that.
Yep. In one day. In fact, in one dinghy. There are 1,000 illegals a week coming over at the moment because the weather's quite good. Basically,
a boat trip.
Yeah, the only defense that Britain has is Poseidon, god of the sea, at this point. And for some reason, he's decided that no, we're going to have nice weather for now and a nice sea.
Right.
So yeah, we've got the same problem, you know. And so these people are being just jammed into towns now, then into local towns.
Yes.
And of course, as you can see, they're all young men fleeing war.
Yep, well done, Labour. Migrant rapes massively up.
Yeah.
Young people in employment massively down. Millionaires massively down.
Yeah, I mean, et cetera. We are in that period of, this is kind of just an insane,
there we go.
Insane number of
sexual rapes. Assaults of a female age 13 or over, rape of a female age 16 or, right.
Yeah.
So
you notice that's gone from about 8,000 in 2006 to 40 plus thousand in 2022. The thing is that these are actually not the latest statistics. It's 76,000 a year now.
Okay, so quadrupling of rape of children.
Yeah, well, nearly 10 times. Nearly 10 times.
Yeah.
So, you know, good thing that they're being placed in towns around the country. And of course, as you covered the other day, economic collapse is just mathematically certain at this point.
Yep.
This is a great segment, by the way. People should go watch it. Because there's just no getting out of this. We're now in a position where people pay fewer tax, income tax, than they take in benefits. There is now a lower birth rate than there is a death rate. It is just inevitable that whatever is happening to the system is just locked in now.
Yeah, I mean, you can see where the state is spending the money. You can see demographics, and you've got a 20-year lead on demographics of people coming into the workforce. Britain will collapse unless it fundamentally changes the liberal post-war settlement, which is basically cradle-to-grave welfare.
And that's not going to change, which is why, as we mentioned earlier, The millionaires and billionaires are just leaving.
The numbers are staggering on this. Have you got the numbers?
I do have the numbers. Yeah. There were a million millionaires back in the day, I think it was. And now, oh no, yeah, there were a million back in 2021. A million millionaires. It's a lot of money. And now there are 442,000 millionaires in 2025. So a 60% drop in the number of rich people in the country. And the rich people... Whether you want to praise Zach Polansky or what's his name, who just quit Gary's Economics.
Yeah.
You can complain about them all they like, but they pay the largest portion of tax.
Yeah, well, one, they pay almost all of the tax.
Yeah.
And secondly, actually, in this day and age, a million is not a staggering amount of money.
No, it's not.
It's not. Just having a house in London will get you there.
Yeah. I mean, technically, by assets, I'm a millionaire, but I don't have £1 million in the bank.
No, but you haven't fled yet, so...
No, not yet.
So there's still work to be done for the Labour government.
Yeah. But that's the point. Like, I don't feel like a rich man, right?
No.
I'm doing fine, I'm happy, but, like,
But you're not driving... Well, you don't drive anything, but if you were driving, you would not be driving a Lamborghini. No. It's like the 1970s idea of a millionaire.
Yeah.
It's just...
That's what a billionaire is now.
Yes.
It's like that's the sort of way things have gone. Anyway, so... Everything's terrible, right? There's nothing substantive on the horizon. God only knows what the budget's going to look like later on this year. I mean, it's just going to be your taxes going up, right? Whatever happens, your taxes are going up because they've got things to pay for, and fewer people are around to pay for those things.
Well, and the thing is, Andy Burnham over this past week when he's been in, I mean, he's been giving away money. Now, to be fair to him, it is... relatively small change each time he makes a promise. But several times a day he comes out there and it's like £1 billion for this, £1 billion for that. The problem is, if you keep spending billions here and there, before long you're talking real money.
Yeah.
And it is starting to add up. And if this carries on until the next budget...
Well, it's not like we've got like a gargantuan surplus of money just sloshing around in the coffers.
Oh, no, we're running a deficit with the bond market right now.
We're running a deficit on everything, literally everything. So the BBC have been really getting into the hard-hitting journalism on it, though. And this is just emblematic of the weirdly soft landing that Andy Burnham has been getting.
Yeah.
What's happening to his dog, Axel? Well, he's going to be staying in Manchester because he wouldn't get on with Larry the cat.
Yeah, the aesthetics of this are so much better, though. I mean, there he is. He's smiling, wearing normal clothes, holding a puppy over a beautiful vista. I mean... I appreciate he inherits all of the same problems, but you compare that to Starmer.
Yeah.
You would never. I mean, first of all, nobody's ever seen him smile. You know, maybe one or two.
When he smiles, he looks like he's about to punch you. It's kind of a grimace.
Or it's a bit Hannibal Lecter. Yeah, you know, maybe one or two Ukrainian young models have seen him smile, but most of us have never seen him smile. So I mean, just on the aesthetics, I mean, it is looking better. I mean, just on the point of while we're on Starmer, I mean. I should have said this at the time when he was still in office, but that was a man who had basically only two poles to his politics. One was the support of Southern lawyers, human rights lawyers, and the second was the unwavering support of every Abrahamic religion that was not Christianity.
Correct. Hmm. But on the plus side, Starmer was at least serious about the system itself. Right?
Yes.
Well, you know, obviously he was an inveterate enemy of ours, but at least he was a serious guy doing serious things. If you want to support us through these trying times, you can go and get Islander 6 from shop.locities.com. A link will be in the description. It's, of course, an amazing magazine. And the best way to help us pay the taxes the government's going to demand... help us survive this unbelievable government. Like, oh God. Everyone thought Starmer was bad.
Unfortunately, the left are really good at supporting their creatives and the right not so much. But I mean, you do get a really good collectible magazine.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Luke Guilford's article in it is brilliant. And I'm about to do a video on Will Tanner's magnificent one on Orania, because it sent me down, you're going to love it. It sent me down a rabbit hole
that
you are not going to believe. But I'm not going to spoil it. Orania, just in case you don't know, is the whites only town in South Africa. There's a lot.
Oh, I'm looking for, yeah.
And
I haven't read that one yet. I must read that one.
No, it's really good. It sent me down an amazing rabbit hole. So Starmer, whether you liked him or not, I mean, he was obviously an inveterate enemy of the British people, but he was at least a serious guy doing serious things.
Yes.
This is a clownish administration being given a completely free ride by the Westminster media, by like the Fleet Street media. It's actually kind of crazy how soft they're being on him. But I said this at the beginning, right? Way before Andy Burnham even got in. Andy Burnham is not going to be hated in the same way Keir Starmer is, right? Because Andy Burnham, listen, right? People will be disappointed with him. People will be unhappy with him. But Starmer was hated because he codes as an enemy, right? Because he literally looks like the Terminator. Because he's got black, dead, shark-like eyes. And he comes out and says, no, I'm going to ruin you because I hate you because you're a Brit, right? Andy Burnham doesn't do that.
I mean, he hasn't been tested yet.
No. I'm not... Andy Burnham will fail.
Yeah.
He will fail, right?
but the difference with Starmer is it was so, like you say, it was unflinching, it was shark-like, it was very obvious that he hates you. With Burnham, he's trying to pretend that he's a likable guy and look, he can even hold a puppy.
I'm sure he is a likable guy.
But when it flips with him, all of that current image that is working for him will suddenly flip into insincerity. So I don't think it's impossible that he's as hated.
I don't think he's going to be hated. Right? I think people will be disappointed with him. I think people will be, even if they're not like, I think they'll be broadly sympathetic, but just see him as a clownish figure, right?
To be fair, okay, so I don't think people hated Rishi Sunak.
No.
They just forgot to talk about him.
Yes.
He just became, even when he was prime minister at the end, everybody kind of forgot about him. And maybe
everyone
that's,
felt kind of sorry for him when he was out in the rain, which was obviously the point of him going out into the rain with an umbrella.
But maybe you're right. Maybe that is the fate of Burnham. It's not that he becomes hated. He just becomes an irrelevance.
Yeah.
And we forget about him. And the last 6 months is discussing...
I don't even think it'll be forgetting about him. I think there'll be a general kind of sympathy, but just to view him as kind of like, well, he's obviously not the man... that's needed, right? You know, the hour is calling for a particular kind of man, and it's obviously not Andy Burnham. And especially as Andy Burnham seems to be living out a kind of fantasy throughout this, it's really weird. So he opened number 10 in the north in a place called Heron House.
Right.
Whitehall civil servants been offered relocation packages. I'm sure they're quite generous to encourage them to move. And he's working there officially.
I'm sure that won't impact your career in the slightest if you suddenly pack off several hundred miles.
Yeah.
But why does Andy Burnham get a work from home office? Why does he get that? And look, when if Farage comes in, assuming Farage doesn't blow himself up any further than he already is, but can he have a number 10 in Clacton? Because Manchester is 2.5 hours away by train.
Can he undo?
But Clacton is 2 hours and 5 minutes away by train. So you can make an argument that Clacton gets a number 10 as well.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I mean, not that he ever goes to Clacton, but...
Yeah, number 10 in Weston-super-Mare.
Yeah.
It's 2 hours away, you know. But the point is, like, Burnham, his administration is just fetishizing Manchester at this point. It's fetishizing the North. And it's really quite embarrassing to watch, because obviously I'm not from the North, so I'm just looking at this like, okay.
This is a man having a midlife crisis, harking back to all that was good in life, his 20s, when he was involved in Manchester-era student politics.
And absolutely. And this whole thing is a kind of like fantasy wish list that he's going down, and he's trying really hard to sell it to the public, right? For example, look at all these social media appointments that he wants to make in Number 10 North.
Qualify?
Well, yeah, exactly.
What could we get?
Not too bad.
68 grand a year.
That's the video lead. You'd have to be bloody good. It's not bad. But they've obviously got a strategy in mind, which is become social media influencers.
Okay.
And that's... We'll get back to them being social media
influencers. Why does that need to be a government role? Why don't you just go to people who already have platforms and just appear on their shows?
Why not just produce very boring looking videos where you just state your thing and then let the media say, this is what the Prime Minister has said?
Yeah, but I mean,
have a press conference, basically.
I don't know the left half that well that isn't establishment. I know the establishment left, and I know the radical left. I don't know if there is a soft left on YouTube, but so Novara Media is not it.
There is a soft left on YouTube.
Okay, but why can't you just send a minister to appear on Novara Media the way that you used to with Newsnight?
Yeah.
Why do you need to employ these people?
What's the guy's name? There are a bunch of them, and they're very like soft-handed, doughy men.
Yeah, I would have guessed.
So yeah. People who are definitely confined by their politics from biology. I can't remember the guy's name now.
Aren't we all, with my testosterone levels, how could I be anything other than a base nationalist? Yes.
Anyway, the point is, this is clearly the plan, right? Now, let's talk about the plan for a minute before we get into the social media of it. Because in a way, we have to kind of commend the Northerners for their animal cunning, right? They planned to take over the Labour government, and they succeeded in quite spectacular fashion, actually. So you remember that back in April, Angela Rayner was holding secret meetings with Andy Burnham because Starmer was struggling a bit, and they were like, yeah, okay, all right.
What a clash of intellect that must have been.
Well, a meeting of the minds, but whether you like it or not, like, their plan was incredibly successful, right?
Was it?
Yeah, it was, because they planned this out. So on the 11th of May, that's where the floor 2 of Heron House, which is Number 10 North, was leased. Well, Josh Simons resigned as the MP for Makefield 3 days after that. So they knew what they were doing. They had this all in hand and all in mind. They're like, right, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to find a constituency that has never not voted Labour. Oh, there just happens to be a 97% white British Labour voting constituency right here in Manchester. They've always voted Labour. They're exactly, the Greens can't snake us on this.
Yes.
Nigel Farage is beatable in this area.
Yes.
And so what we'll do is we'll get Number 10 North ready. We'll get that. They've obviously spent ages. Because, I mean, like, this whole thing, when we get to the images of it, it's all kitted out. Like, it's all been done all in advance, right? So they've obviously planned all of this.
Yes.
And they're like, right, okay, so Josh is on board. He's going to resign. Yes. I'm going to stand as the MP. We've spoken to the NEC. Yes. Unlike last time where Starmer blocked me, we've got it so they're not going to block me from doing it. So Starmer's control of the NEC is weakened. I'm going to get in there, then I'm going to come heroically down to Downing Street, like Lenin returning to Russia, and it's all over.
I will admit there's definitely a plan. The only thing I would quibble on is how much of a masterful plan it is, because the key element is in the plan is that the most hated man in Britain continues to be hated and eventually gets turfed out. I mean, it's not...
Yeah, but
not exactly Game of Thrones, is it?
Yeah, well, it kind of is, though, because he did have an iron grip over the Labour Party. And Andy Burnham gave them all permission to essentially revolt from Keir Starmer and force Keir Starmer out. So this was a fairly complex plan that they put into operation, and they did manage to pull it off actually smoothly and without any interruptions.
All right, I'll give you a medium weight plan for that.
No, it's quite good. Like, it was quite a good plan. And, you know, catapulted Burnham straight into the premiership.
Yes.
And defeated all of their enemies in the Labour Party. Like, you've got to give them credit where it's due. They planned it in advance. They pulled it off flawlessly. Mm. And now they have, like, this, they are living the dream at the moment. And you can very much see this, because, like, you've got them, basically, this is what their social media influencer team is doing. Videos like this.
Yes. Hi, Andy. Could you show me around your number 10 North office?
Please? Come on, then. Come in.
Brilliant.
It's great.
It's lovely.
Very happy with it.
Can you show me some of the things you got?
New folder. Here's my leaving
showing off the stationery.
Manchester. Look at that. Gold disc of The Queen is Dead. I need to return that to Johnny Marr, actually. Great cartoon. Andy Burnham gets his hat-trick against Liverpool. Brit Awards in Manchester. And then over there, on the other wall. Now, that is something I treasure. Somebody who
Andy,
was...
Andy, what are you...
Hang on. You don't need to see that. Okay, sorry. I think we better leave now.
All right, sorry.
Cheers.
I'll see you soon.
See you soon.
I mean... I'm getting, yeah. So I'm getting a really strong vibe, but I don't want to say it just in case you're leading where I think you're leading.
Is it David Brent in the office?
Yes, it's David Brent in the office. Yes,
mad, mad. How much that it's just like him. It's actually, you're not the first to notice this. Obviously, here's a little combination of clips people put together.
New folder.
Seen that clock calculator.
Okay, I think we better leave now.
If that's it, can you leave now, please?
In Makerfield, Oral, Winstanley, Hindley, Platbury,
Reading, Aldershot, Bracknell. You know, I've got a Didcot, Yateley.
Well, there was obviously a decision taken by the PLP. It wasn't by me. I wasn't the Parliamentary Labour Party.
This is someone else's decision. I didn't want to do this.
To our members of Parliament, and obviously. I then responded.
The board of directors come to me and they go, oh, David, you're the best man for the job. You know, you've got to take the job and we won't take no for an answer.
Genuinely remarkable. And the thing is, well, the camera work was even like the camera work in the office. So it was just like, okay. We've got the David Brent social media influencer administration. Now, I mean, just... kind of embarrassing, but what are you going to do?
Normal commentary will follow shortly after I've composed myself, but that is...
But the whole thing is like, hey, even down to the narrative as well, because like I said, he claimed that he had nothing to do with the overthrow of Keir Starmer. It's like, no, you planned it out.
Yeah.
You had a cunning plan. It actually worked. And now you get to be Prime Minister David Brent. What a
so on the nose as well.
It's crazy how much it lines up. Like, none of them obviously watched The Office. I guess that's a Southerner thing. Anyway, so, yeah. You've
got I bet they all watch In the Thick of It, though.
I mean, maybe.
And yeah, you'll start getting... Yeah, somebody should start doing In the Thick of It comparisons as well.
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, lots of people have noticed, my God, he's just like David. Which isn't necessarily a negative thing, but anyway... So they decided to lean into it. That's the American office.
Oh, okay. I wonder why I didn't recognize it.
Yeah.
You think they could have got the British version, couldn't you?
You would, but... Okay, amazing. Then recreating The Office just caps off an excellent week of comms. It's like, is this an excellent week of comms, though, right? Is this an excellent week of comms? Like, he's been putting out these just loads of social media videos, right? Tell me what he's actually saying here.
We can't kick this can down the road any longer. Last week, I said we needed a different kind of politics. Problem solving, not point scoring. Nowhere is that more urgent than social care. For decades, governments have kicked this issue down the road because they've seen it as too risky, too difficult, and too complicated. Now, politicians will always have different views, but I'm serious about fixing this issue. And to do that, we have to find common ground. and listen to others to find a way forward. It's time to draw a line under people playing politics when the human cost of that means carers struggling, families paying the price, and our NHS buckling under the strain. This comes down to a choice. We can carry on passing the problem to the next generation, or we can face it head on and work together to build a care system that gives people dignity, security, and the support they deserve. This is about bringing back hope that we can finally fix the difficult issues that have been ignored for too long and making Britain believe again. That's why I'm making this choice, and I'm prepared to put everything I've got behind it.
What choice?
Yeah.
Like, what's he actually doing here?
So I suspect the issue that he might be driving at, and
I've got to guess at what the actual message of this video is.
I think I can guess because, I mean, having been through this with an elderly relative, there was a real issue here. Once your elderly relative gets poorly enough, the NHS will say they have to be in a care home.
Yes.
And that care, or nursing home, and that nursing home is going to charge you £3,000 a week sometimes. An enormous amount of money, and you don't have the option of leaving them at home. The NHS says we will put them in here and we will send you the bill. So that is a real problem.
We don't know that that's the problem that he's talking about, because he was not specific about that at all.
I'm putting it together with context of other things that MPs have been talking about.
Sure, but
the issue is that we're broke and we can't afford the existing stuff that we've got. So,
but this is the point, isn't it? This is why he gives no substantive detail, right? It's just
if he mentioned anything specific,
people would be like, right,
and it would move bond yields immediately. Yeah,
but we can't do these things, Andy, and therefore you've just got to say, well, look, I've got a bunch of good vibes here. Mm. I've got some goodwill. I'd like to put some goodwill forward. It's okay. I mean, you're so vague that I have to divine what I think you're talking
about. Well, and he's also promised another, what is it, between 13 and 18 billion to defence that hasn't been funded from anywhere.
Yeah, but he's also increasing the bloody foreign aid budget and things. Yep. Just like, we haven't got any bloody money.
Where is the money coming from?
Yeah,
but anyway. And his answer is going to be taxes, but as you've already pointed out, the people who are paying the taxes are leaving.
Anyway, it's just a non-stop influencer politics. Here's five things I've done in my first week. Just
as if he's replying to an email from Elon Musk. Yeah, this is what I got done this week.
Here's five things I've done in my first week as Prime Minister. On Monday, I launched a new national drive to end rough sleeping. On Tuesday, I announced a tax cut on energy bills. Wednesday, a £2 cap on bus fares across England. On Thursday, a 20% cut on business rates for thousands of pubs, clubs and music venues. And on Friday, I opened Number 10 North, which is going to drive
just a wish list.
Okay, well, every one of those is I announced something. And that reminds me of the Margaret Thatcher quote that too many politicians, what was it she said? Too many politicians give a speech and think they've achieved something.
Yes, he's just giving a wish list. It's like, okay, but all of those things are going to incur debts, Andy.
Yes.
All of those things are going to incur a debt. Where are you going to get the money to pay for those things from? And the answer is you don't know. Right? You don't know.
Because he's tapped out. They're on the other side of the Laffer curve.
Yeah.
Every time they raise taxes at this point, they collect less revenue.
Yes.
Because people are like, yeah, sod this, I'm going.
Yes.
Or I'm going to do less hours. I'm going to do 3 days a week instead of five.
It's like being, your car is stuck in a giant muddy hole. Mm. And you're like, okay, I'm just going to really rev it this time. Mm. I'm just going to slam the accelerator down. And that, no. The more you do that, the more mud gets gummed up in the works, right? If anything, you'd have to go very, very slowly to creep out of it. No, you're just going full pedal to the floor, and this is just going to get you more stuck in the problem that you're in, right?
Yeah.
It's exactly like, you know, you're just getting, more people are going to go, fewer revenues are going to be collected by the Treasury. The problem will get worse. And it's just, okay, but they're just a bunch of social media influencers with their wish list.
So why is AI a cabinet job?
Don't care, right? What is this presentation? Sorry, guys, we're here making TikTok videos.
Yeah.
That's really important that we have to explain to Zoomers on TikTok about AI. They don't need to know.
I mean, just on a trivial point, but I mean, we make lots of videos. We don't feel the need to begin ours by throwing ourselves into a chair to create a bit of faux energy.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. Anyway, speaking of faux energy, like, again, very David Brent. Now in my life. Why do I give valuable time? aren't you the Prime Minister?
This what, he wants to be careful here, because if this tips over into proper power, if the David Brent thing sticks, is that real?
Yes. I'm not gonna play with the music because I don't want a copyright strike. But yes, this is him DJing.
This David Brent thing
is really gonna stick.
That could really stick.
Like, is this? It seems to be a genuinely good description of like what he's actually like. Like, dude, are you not the Prime Minister? Do you understand that we're in the middle of a rape epidemic? Do you understand that like a million young people can't get jobs? Yeah. Do you understand?
But
like,
he's just landed his dream job, so he's really happy.
In the North, guys. Yeah. We can put Northerners in little terrorist houses. Yes. Do you not understand? Yes. I've been dreaming this my whole life.
I'm sorry that you're cooped up in a little house, unless you're a young person, in which case you can't afford to even get a little house. And I'm sorry that your daughter's just been raped by a Channel migrant, but I've just got my dream job, and you have to appreciate how happy I am.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And they're all like this. They're all like this. I mean, it's just another one.
Surely that one's not real.
No, these are all real. This is the David Brent administration that we've finally arrived at. And it's just like, okay, great. Absolutely great. And they're all like this. Like, they're all bloody like this. Like, again, it keeps going. It just keeps going. Like, I'm not going to keep playing because I don't want to get copyright struck.
Yeah.
But all of them are like this. All of these bloody politicians doing these stupid fucking dances. Like, what is happening to British politics? Sorry, what do you think you're doing?
I mean, I didn't mind so much when AOC did it all those years ago, because at least she was an 8.5 at the time. But it's completely different when it's some... I mean, British politics is showbiz for ugly people.
Very clearly.
And, I mean, this is... I mean, I've come around to your way of thinking now. Andy Burnham is not going to be hated, he's going to be mocked.
Yeah, like he's... and. In Britain, there is a general sense of despair.
Yeah.
Everyone is looking at the country around them. And I speak to just like friends, family members, like taxi drivers, just normal people.
Yes.
Right? People who are not like involved in politics. And that's like, oh, look at the state of this. You know, look at the state of the high street.
Yeah.
Look, what are these people doing? Why are these foreigners here? You know, there are too many foreigners around these days. You know, things like that. Yeah. And these goons are ignoring all of these problems and doing their little dance because, like you say, they've landed their dream job. And they're like, hey, guys, we can be a social media influencer and just announce things. Hey, I'm for all these good things. Look at all these good things. And then we can go dancing and we can have number 10 in the North. And this is just an...
I mean, he might get away with this for the first week. But as the problems start piling up, as they realise they haven't got any money, that we're being squeezed everywhere, that the bond yields are going up, that people's daughters are being raped by Channel migrants, that people are losing
tomorrow
their jobs, people
could
are being
be
stabbed,
Southport.
Stabbed in the neck when they walk down the street. If they keep up this...
energy?
This frivolity. I mean, David Brent is the best way of describing it. This farce. If they keep up this farce...
Yeah. Like, they don't understand... that actually people are really struggling. Like they'll say it, but their attitude does not show it at all. The revealed behaviours that they do is just like, okay, no, you are enjoying this too much.
No, they have got a massive dopamine hit going on at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, this is here's another, oh, let's rank pub snacks. This is important.
Come out of that bag, I hope.
Oh, great. Andy Burnham blind ranks pub snacks. It's like, dude, Okay.
Could you do something about the 137 billion that we're spending on interest payments, maybe, when you finish ranking the pub snacks?
Can you do something about the £1 billion a month we spend on Boris waivers claiming benefits? Yeah.
Or the super dinghies, 1,000 people a day arriving. I mean, could you address any of this?
The economy is mathematically guaranteed to collapse.
Yes.
Because the birth rate is below the death rate, Andy. Got any thoughts?
Yeah, and the entire welfare system is built on the assumption that there will always be more
it's literally a pyramid
young people than old people.
Yes. And, yeah, just any thoughts. But no, but I mean, you can see who this is appealing to, right? Oh, Lewis Goodall from the newsagents, so like the most, you know, libtard, centrist libtard outlet you can imagine. Oh, it'd be so easy for this to be cringe, and yet it's not. Yeah, it is. But at least we can see who this is aimed at, right?
But it is frivolous, and there are serious issues. And there will, in a few weeks' time, there will be a horrific migrant attack, or some other damn thing will happen, or events will happen.
Russia could be anything. I mean, you know, Russian ships have been in the bloody English Channel.
Yes.
Deliberately trying to intimidate.
And as soon as events start happening, people will look at, well, compare it to Russia. They look at, like, the seriousness of Putin and Sergei Lavrov, and then they look at this and they think, well, hang on a minute, I might not like those other guys, but they actually look like they're serious.
They look like they can do the job. Because what will happen, right, is that Angela Rayner will go on, like, Good Morning Britain. She was on there the other day, right? Mm. And they will sit there and say, well, we were trying, I can't do the Northern accent, but we were trying to do the best we can, but we're basically retarded, so can you really blame us? Right, that's basically the argument they're going to have to make, and they will make.
Yeah,
it's like, and well,
at least it's sincere.
Yeah, exactly. We sincerely tried to do nice things, but we're retarded. We couldn't have been expected to know that this was going to destroy the economy. We couldn't have been expected to know that, you know, we can't do anything. You know, we can't fight Russia. We can't do anything. Like, they will act as if they are somehow not responsible for the.
So this is a very common theme in politics. I've seen it my whole life, which is whenever there's a change of regime. And then that doesn't have to be government. It can just be leading. In fact, just change rhythm and leaders do this more than anything.
Yeah.
Is they try desperately to overcompensate for whatever the flaw of the previous was. So you saw this with Boris Johnson taking over from Theresa May. She was very dour and serious. And so Boris really played into this other thing. And it's happening here as well. So Keir Starmer was seen as very shark-like. Yeah, bureaucratic, shark-like, unemotional, soulless, a psychic blank. And he's overcompensating going the other way.
I miss Keir Starmer because of it now. I miss Keir Starmer. I mean, again, for what, like, as much as he may have hated us and I hated him, like, at least he was serious. Like, these people are clowns. Like, when there's actually a terrible tragedy and loads of people have died and the country is on a knife edge because, like, you know, a Muslim has blown something up or stabbed a bunch of kids.
And there are riots.
Yeah. They're going to be like, well,
how is this energy going to deal with a riot?
Exactly. And all they're going to do is go, well, you know, we had the best of intentions. Like, yeah, okay, but you are still clowns and you can't fix any of these problems. But this is a great post, right? We need to talk about a deeper problem in British politics. First, it was Ed Davey Pratt falling off a kayak. Then it was Polanski dancing on stage with the Rainbow Mafia. Oh, yeah, I didn't even get him gay dancing with the leather-clad guys.
He's done it again?
He did it the other day, though. Oh, right. Moth and Ali was absent for some reason. Hannah Spencer, the CBBS plumber, and now the Prime Minister trying to audition for the next series of The Office. MPs are being murdered. Yeah, like, Anne Widdecombe was bludgeoned to death 21 times in the head with a hammer by what we assume is some leftist the other day.
Well, who was instigated by... you know, amongst other people, hope not hate, who are now the chief of staff.
Yeah, they're now 10. In the government, in Andy Burnham's cabinet. So the economy is on the brink of collapse. Rape statistics are exploding. People feel poorer and less safe. And the leaders of left-wing parties are behaving like teenage social media influencer wannabes. What is happening? What explains this infantilization of left-wing politics so spectacularly detached from the reality millions of Britons are facing? These people are clowns. They treat everything like a performance rather than a responsibility. Deeply unserious, low IQ people. Why are so many people rewarding this with their votes?
Well, I suppose,
great question.
If you're left wing, I mean, what? Where do you have to go, apart from Starmer level bureaucraticness, Stalin level something, which probably wouldn't work with our constitution anyway. So it's a bit different. But Starmer moved in. I mean, he got the nickname Queer Stalin for a reason. I mean, he was trying to move in that direction, or deeply unserious. Student politics. I mean, I'm not sure where else that you can go on the left in this country.
I don't know. I mean, this isn't even student politics, right? Student politics is very ideological. What this is like northern wish fulfillment politics. So, if we could just cap the bus fares, if we could just put northerners in little two up, two downs, if we could just do this, if we just have a number 10 north, then everything would be great. It's like, no, it's not going to be great. It's going to be shit. And everything's getting worse, as we know. Anyway, the question is the influencer marketing working? And yeah, kind of, actually. People prefer Andy Burnham to basically anyone else when put up in a direct competition. So, okay. Like I said, he's not going to be hated. He will be thought of as a clown or a prat, though.
Yeah.
I think, because, like, he's taking out a lot of credit at the moment with the British public, and that will be called in, right, at some point.
I mean, it's not the subject for today, but at some point we must come back to the epic failure of Nigel Farage. And not just Nigel Farage, but Zach Polanski.
Interestingly, we're going to go on to the polls now.
Okay.
But just to be clear, I told everyone he wouldn't be hated like Starmer, because the reason Starmer was hated is because he seemed to have malintentions towards you. He seemed to personally dislike you. Andy Burnham
will
be seen as a moron, as a David Brent-style clown.
Yes.
But he doesn't seem to be a hateful person.
So I don't know if Andy Burnham hates me yet. I know that he loves the North, but I haven't seen him show the other side of the coin yet. But no, before we move on, the interesting thing I'll point about this is, look, I mean, I know that this is personal ratings, not party ratings, and party ratings show something different, as I'm sure you're about to come on to. But look at who has the highest personal rating. It's the Labour leader and it's the Conservative leader.
Yeah.
That's
because they get the best.
Conservative versus Labour back again.
Because they get the best press.
Yeah.
Like Kemi Badenoch has been getting nothing but good press recently. Andy Burnham has been getting nothing but good press recently. The media are well aware at this point that actually, oh no, it was good for us when it was Labour and Conservative.
And actually, look at, is in the list there, Burnham versus Badenoch. Badenoch, 38% versus 26%.
Yep.
That is traditional mainstream politics. Back with a bit. If their parties won the same rating as them personally,
yep,
then Greens and Reform would just be a sideshow.
Yeah. And the fact that they're not is the issue, right? So the polls have changed basically in the way that is to be expected. Reform have dipped to their lowest point for a long time now. In fact, let me get the 2 years. It's been a long time since, right, so 23%. So previously they were at 23% back in, there we go, December 2024.
Right.
So that, I mean, when you look at it, you can see the direct trajectory downwards for Nigel Farage. The shine has very clearly come off. I mean, that's not a government in waiting.
I mean, one self-inflicted wound after another. I mean, I might do a segment about this when I'm next on the podcast, I think, tomorrow. From my perspective tomorrow anyway. But people have been sort of grumping on the right about how the standard thing was stalled. Why don't you just all bundle into Reform? Why don't the Tories
bundle? They kicked us out.
Well, yeah, exactly. But
they literally said, get away from us, right-wingers.
Yeah, we were excommunicated. Yeah. We didn't leave. Yeah, I mean that's what's going on. But yeah, I mean Farage has epic. I mean he should be in the high 30s. I mean even with a Burnham bounce, he should maybe be dipping into the low 30s.
Yeah,
because some sort of Burnham bounce is inevitable.
I mean Farage,
the way he's mishandled this,
he never talks about the economy. He doesn't talk strongly enough about immigration. Like we know half the country just wants the immigrants to go home.
Yeah.
Like YouGov polling shows it. If YouGov polling shows it, you know, like you can guarantee that's not some sort of right wing agenda being.
But increasingly, people are thinking, well, what? But I mean, what is the point of Reform? I mean,
yeah. But
policy wise, they're the same as the Conservatives now.
So there is a few changes here from a few weeks back, right? Or people say. So the Greens run 18% and they've gone straight down to 12%, and Labour are obviously sucking up those people. But they've only gone up to 21%. Right.
So this is a point I've made on a whole bunch of these previous shows, is that Labour were losing support to both the right and the left. And I always said that the best thing to do is to win back the support of the left, because it's easier for them to do. So, I mean, that appears what they've done. So most of the narrowing of the gap, and I think there have been some polls that actually put Labour ahead, it makes perfect sense to me that you do this soft left shift.
Yeah.
You shore up your left-wing flank. And, I mean, all you need to do is, worst-case scenario, even if you can't shift the revolution that's coming away from Reform, if you can at least be the official opposition, you're still in the game.
Yeah, you're still important. I mean, just to go back, you know, before the general election, Keir Starmer was Labour, was at 45%. Yeah. Now, that changed dramatically going into the election. And then Southport happened not long afterwards, and Keir Starmer just absolutely tanked down to 16%.
I mean, so go back to before the election again, just a bit. Okay, so yeah, about there. Is there any reason why Farage should not be at 45%, Labour at 23%, and the Tories at 12%?
Not really.
If he had played it better,
yeah, no.
And by playing it better, I just mean not self-sabotage regularly.
Yeah. Farage, this at this point, right, when he got to here, yeah, he should have just gone full spectrum. Right? Yes. He should have got everyone who's disaffected, everything, in every yeah, sphere, right? You know, all
yes, we will deport them. Yes, we will deport the families, the farmers, of the grooming gangs, the lot.
You go out to the farmers, no, we're going to have, you know, farming subsidies. We're going to get rid of any you know, like penalties that you have on your land.
Yes.
Your land is your land. You farm it as you best can to make money, blah, blah, blah. So full spectrum on the farmers. You have full spectrum on, you know, other business owners. What we're going to do is we're going to abolish business rates or council or corporate tax or something like that. You have full spectrum on that. You have full spectrum on immigration. But like, yeah, young people, you can't get a job because of all these foreigners. They're going home. They're going home. My message to you is they're going home. You're getting a job. You have a future. But instead,
it was all laid out for him as well.
It was all there. All of these giant constituencies right there. Who's concerned about this? Who's concerned about that? Just give a message for each one. What's Reform's economic message? I have no idea.
I don't actually.
I have no idea.
Yeah, like, I cover this stuff.
Like, I cover this stuff every day, and I don't know what Nigel Farage wants to do to actually fix the economy. Like, come out with something really solid. Like, abolish business rates, abolish stamp duty, abolish whatever. Like, the Conservatives said they were going to abolish stamp duty. Mm. Like, Kemi Badenoch came out and said that. It's like, okay, well, that's something. You know, I mean, in fact, let's have a look at the Conservatives here. So you'll notice the Conservatives haven't really improved very much. They've gone from 17 to 19%.
Yeah, but they haven't lost either.
They haven't lost. They've you know, Kemi Badenoch has held the line.
Yes.
You know, okay, great. That's great. Not very useful.
And actually, as we've seen from the Lord Ashcroft polling, the Conservatives are the ones, if you're still a Conservative voter, you are the least likely to flip to Reform.
Yes.
Even Labour people are
because
more
all
likely
of the Conservative voters who went to Reform have gone.
Yes.
Right. But the problem with that is that if you're a Conservative voter in the here and now, you're only around for another 20 years. Right. The Conservatives do not reproduce themselves in young people.
No
young person, like very, very few young people want to be Conservatives. In fact, Restore Britain beats the Conservatives and Reform with among young people.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, because well,
and especially during the mums and dads years,
but also because we're speaking to the future that young people are having. Yeah. It's like, no, we need to fix this country for you. Yeah. So the Conservative vote share is on a clock and everyone knows it.
Yeah.
Labour have not had the massive bounce that everyone was hoping for. Like, you were on 45% just 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, they're not tied up with age demographics. They're tied up with geography.
And also...
And public sector.
Public sector. They're losing the immigrants to the Greens, but the Greens have had a nice dip there, though. I mean, the problem with Zach Polanski is that his biggest recruiter was Keir Starmer.
Well,
Keir Starmer hated the left in his own.
I mean, Keir Starmer came into the Labour Party and immediately started purging the left, and he thought that meant.
Well, I mean, look at the trajectory of the two things. They cross here.
Yes, because Keir Starmer thought that by purging his left, that would mean that they disappeared.
Yeah,
no. And instead they just created their. Well, they didn't create their own party, but they took on a party and they basically, you know, tore his arse out, which is exactly the same mistake that Nigel Farage made.
Oh, and if I just purge these people, they disappear. No, they just go somewhere else.
But the bizarre thing is he did it after Starmer had re-demonstrated the mistake.
Yeah. You can see it in the polling. Like, yeah, Starmer's I've made.
When was Rupert kicked out?
I think it was somewhere in 2025, I think.
Okay.
But the point is, it was after
the Greens had started their upwards trajectory. So,
maybe it might have been before, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it won't have 10% as opposed to 4% before the election. But the point is that British politics regularly demonstrates that if you get rid of people, you don't literally. I mean, it's not you don't literally get rid of them with a bullet.
No, they go somewhere else.
Yeah, they go somewhere else.
And that's exactly what we're seeing with Burnham bringing those Greens back in.
Yeah.
But the thing is, this isn't a huge percentage of the electorate, right? There are probably about 12% of the electorate who are like radical progressives, right? Mm. And so the Labour Party are arguing over that 12%, but that 12% has proven itself to be utterly incompatible with anything that isn't a radical progressive.
Yeah, but for a long time, they were mostly in the Labour Party.
Yeah.
Jeremy Corbyn was a Labour MP under Tony Blair, for example.
And they just sucked it up as part of the coalition back here. Keir Starmer destroyed the coalition and Andy Burnham is trying to put it back together. But I don't know if he can do it. So there have been other polls just to give you some outliers. More in Common have come out with this poll.
Yes.
Labour on 28, Reform on 24. So that breaks Nigel Farage's. We've been ahead in more than 200 polls consecutively. Not anymore. Mm. Now, More in Common are not great, actually. YouGov are far more accurate as pollsters than More in Common. But they are, I think, trying to lead with this, because Luke Trill, who's the director of More in Common, he's always on Sky News. And he's always, you know, he's the kind of like court pollster for them. Mm. And so I think this is about leading the polls, basically. And if you were to map this out onto the country, it's still not good for anyone. I mean, Labour get 325, allegedly, which technically is a government. I think, no, in fact...
So under this last poll, which is actually quite tight, goes to show the electoral system, the first-past-the-post system, still heavily rewards the incumbent parties. Because it was Labour, then Reform, quite close behind, but in this Reform, a third.
Yeah. Not great for Reform. This is, you know, Nigel Farage is well past his high watermark. Then you have a YouGov
poll. What an epic series of mistakes Farage has made.
But then you've got the YouGov poll, which, again, YouGov, the most accurate pollster in the country, whether you like them or not.
Level.
It's all very level. You know, Reform, Labour and the Conservatives. Just, okay.
I mean, and that would have to be, actually, it would be an open question as to whether it's a Reform-Conservative pact, but the Conservatives have ruled out going into a coalition government with Reform.
Yeah.
And but actually, the left would find it easier to form a pact.
They'd walk it back. Well, a few interesting things. Like the Greens on 13% probably wouldn't get the number of seats that they would be predicted for, because the Greens and Labour are basically arguing over the same constituencies.
Right? Yeah.
Whereas Reform and Labour and Reform and the Conservatives, there's a lot more sort of spread there. Mm. Like Nigel's arguing with Conservatives and with Labour. So there are a lot, you know, there are a lot of constituencies he could conceivably win.
Yeah.
At least possibly. Whereas the Greens and Labour are very, you know, very much sort of Venn diagram over these same areas.
I mean, from a sheer, you know, best for the country over the long term, not the short term, but over the long term. I don't hate this outcome, actually, because this would shake up politics a hell of a lot.
It shows there's all to play for. One thing I like about this is the Lib Dems on -3 there. That's their lowest rating for a long time. Because, of course, what answer to what question are the Lib Dems the answer?
Yeah, and I like the fact that they're restored, not getting bundled in other anymore.
No, they can't
do that after Makerfield.
Yeah. There hasn't been a massive Andy Burnham bump. I think that his grace period is coming to an end very quickly. He's going to find that he's taken out a lot of credit that the bill is going to be paid on, that come due on.
If he just does it for a few more weeks, we'll get tired, but almost certainly an event will happen.
Not even just the event. Like at some point, he's making a lot of promises economically at the moment. Where he's like, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But at some point, the bill will come due, right?
Yeah.
And then we'll go into the budget. And then everyone will be like, well, hang on a second.
And that's if he doesn't make the same mistake that Starmer and Rees made, which is to scare everybody out of the country before the budget.
Yeah. And then the tax revenues will come in. Oh, even more millionaires have left.
Yeah.
We have even less money. We have to borrow even more money. Yeah. And we're even more in hock to the bond markets, Andy.
Because the tactic that Starmer and Rees are doing was announce every insane possible tax rise so that when they delivered their budget, the headlines were actually quite good. And even people like me were sitting down doing my Brokenomics saying, oh, it's not as bad as I thought, actually.
Right. They made it sound like it's going to be ridiculous. Yeah.
But everybody changes their behaviour before the budget. And if he does that again, I mean, there's only so... Well, I mean, 60% reduction in millionaires, I mean, that's one. But the amount of people that will cut their hours and do this, retire early, all this kind of stuff.
But what are we not talking about? We're not talking about getting foreigners off benefits. We're not talking about stopping sending money overseas.
Well, even Nigel Farage isn't.
Yeah.
Which is why, what's the point of him?
Like the Jodrell Bank is one of our big, impressive telescopes. It costs £3 million a year. £3 million. And it's going to be shut down.
Right.
Because we can't afford to keep it open.
Well, and that will provide one, maybe two new immigrant hotels.
It was probably like 20 minutes on the NHS.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just such a small amount of money in the grand scheme of things. £3 million. And yeah, no, we're going to let that go. So that's again, like one of the pillars of UK science is just shutting down. We don't need to know about the galaxy, the stars. You know, we don't need scientific advancements. When has Britain ever been known for scientific advancements?
There's no hope or marvel left in the country. It's just how can we tax people more to put more people on welfare?
We are a retirement home and benefit source for foreigners and old people.
Yeah.
Right? That's what we are. And that's what, you know, when we've got every single old Northerner in a little two up, two down terraced house, then the country will be perfect or something. I don't know. But like, it's ridiculous, right? The country is dying. And it's being smothered.
I mean, even immigrant children are getting fed up and leaving. If you listen to YouTube or people on that side who are second or third generation immigrants, they all want to go to Dubai.
Yeah,
they've had it with this place. So
what's the point?
Yeah,
like, what's
and if the immigrant kids who have the entire system rigged in their favour are feeling like that, I mean, what are the native kids doing?
I mean, they're leaving too.
Well,
they're going to Australia. Actually, yes. There's a huge exodus. But anyway, I guess we'll leave it there. But the point being, nothing good is going to happen. All of these ridiculous promises that Andy Burnham is making are just going to, he's just going to have to walk them all back. He's going to be a profound disappointment and kind of a figure of fun. So anyway, we'll leave that there.